This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And we're going to go slightly off format today. This is just going to feature my conversation with Rainn Wilson. His fans know all about him and his portfolio. And of course, in fact, he's in a recent Amazon Prime, do I call it a miniseries? We'll find out. And it's on a subject.
Depends on if it has a season two. If it has only season one, it's a miniseries.
Rainn Wilson, welcome to Star Talk.
Thank you.
I'm calling this my cosmic crib because you and I are just chilling. Normally I have like a co-host and experts and all that. It's just you and I having a conversation, reaching for our geek roots.
I love it. That's awesome. Let's do this.
So you're best known, and do you hate it when people say he's best known for? Do you hate that when people do that?
No, come on. I mean, it's just true. I'm best known for playing Dwight Schrute and...
It's just true. In The Office. And how many seasons did that go?
That was like 9 seasons, 10 seasons.
That's crazy. Every time I turn on, there's The Office, you know.
Yeah.
And so I just want to just congratulations for being a fixture in that show. And in the Geekiverse, you are deeply loved. And especially most recently, you have a show that dropped, and it's called Utopia.
That's
in
right.
Which you play a virologist.
Yes.
So we'll have to get to the bottom of that.
Yep.
And also, you've got a podcast of your own?
Yep.
Soul Pancake? Will I ever be on Soul Pancake?
Probably not. Probably not. You wouldn't make the cut. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
You're not legit enough. No, it's a podcast called Metaphysical Milkshake. I did with Reza Aslan.
Soul Pancake is your production.
And Soul Pancake, it's Soul Pancake is the company that I co-founded. It's a digital media company. So it's Soul Pancake Presents Metaphysical Milkshake. They're very much a part of it. It's kind of in the whole Soul Pancake vibe, which is about exploring life's big questions and making uplifting content and bringing people together. And our podcast is in sync with that.
Does that work today? Because no one wants uplifting content. They thrive on conflict and tribalism. So how's that working out?
Well, yes. How is that working out? You know, there is
you're not following the Facebook model.
There is a large percentage of the population that is looking for uplifting content and unifying content and something that contains hope and joy even. And you know, I just look at. I mean, you saw the documentary, The Social Dilemma, yes?
Yes.
So very
interesting. I mean, it got right to the heart of the problems.
Yeah. And I mean, I knew a lot of the stuff that was in it before. A lot of people watch it and go like, "Well, I knew all that." It's like, well, yeah, I knew it, but it wasn't put together the puzzle pieces weren't put together in such a coherent way. Coherent way, and you see that so much of the division going on in the world right now is this Facebook model. If they can get you outraged, they get you clicking buttons more, and they get more ads, and they make more money. So outrage and division fuels commerce. So we're a digital media company. Yes, we would like people to watch our videos, but we're trying to combat this by bringing people together and using the best aspects of the web and of YouTube and digital content.
That is so noble. I mean, I'm proud of you, and I hope it succeeds by greater than all measures, because then others would then emulate it, and then it would maybe be this force of attraction away from all that continues to divide us. And what's this in that same production company, An Idiot's Guide to Climate Change?
Oh, yes.
So you're into that too.
You'll dig this. I keep wanting to say Dr. Tyson.
No, it's Dr. Neil to you. just Neil, please.
I know, but I keep wanting to say Dr. Tyson. Why is that? You command such respect. I never want to call anyone a doctor. Even my own doctor I call Steve.
It is fascinating. Many people call me that, and I don't introduce myself that way.
Yeah.
When I give public talks, I say, here's doctor. No, I don't. But so I have to receive it as an unsolicited honorific.
Yes. Okay.
And,
good.
And
good.
I'm warmed by it, but still, it's not necessary.
Yeah. Well. Okay, Neil. All right, Neil. Shut the f- up. Here's what we're gonna do. So you know, you would dig this show, An Idiot's Guide to Climate Change. Here's what we did. I got involved with this nonprofit called Arctic Base Camp that basically explores the science of how climate change is affecting the Arctic and tries to really impart that information to movers and shakers. Because as you know, in the world of climate change, what's happening in the Arctic is far more extreme than what's happening even in California. I mean,
yeah. In fact, when they say we're warming the Earth by 1 or 2 degrees, that's the average. The Arctic gets a much bigger hit from that.
Exactly, almost double what we're feeling in North America.
Almost
right
double.
Now.
That's
so.
Right.
I got invited to take a trip with them to Iceland and Greenland and meet some scientists that were working up there. And so we didn't really have a budget for Soul Pancake. It's a, you know, it's a smallish company. So, but on like a $60,000 budget, we were able to kind of pull together. I kind of documented myself on this trip up to Greenland, and we made it a 6-part series. Greta Thunberg is on the series. And the whole point of it was like, listen, there's a lot of people that believe in the science of climate change. Of course, as you always say, you don't believe in science. Science just
right,
is.
Right, of course. But wait, back up for a second. You can't just call up American Airlines and say, book me a trip to Greenland. Like, how did you, what was the path that you took?
So getting to Greenland was a bitch. We had to.
Did someone invite you to Greenland?
Yeah, the scientist, Dr. Gail Whiteman, who's the founder of Arctic Base Camp, and there were a bunch of other scientists that were working up there, and she was like, we were going to do a bunch of events, and she was like, Rain, I'm going up there to meet with these scientists. You should come along and just see firsthand what's going on. And
okay, cool.
We'll document it, and you can make it into this little series. And then you can also kind of, as you know, you can speak to science much more when you've kind of like lived it and gone through it. So the point of the show, though, Neil, was that there's a lot of people that buy the science. There's a lot of people that don't buy the science and think it's kind of a crazy liberal conspiracy. But there are some people in the middle. There are some young people in the middle that are kind of getting it from both sides that, you know, maybe they've got a crazy right-wing uncle that doesn't buy the
science. Yeah, at Thanksgiving. It all happens at Thanksgiving.
Dinner table. Exactly. But maybe their friends at school are climate activists and, you know, or something like that. So or do Fire Drill Fridays with Jane Fonda or something. So they don't know what to think. So I tried to make it like I'm the doofus, I'm the idiot going who doesn't know anything about climate change, wants to learn something and is going on this trek. So it's fun. I try and use humor. It's kind of, you know, off-putting and it was a lot of fun. We had Greta Thunberg was on it and we had a blast.
Excellent. Did you glean any tactics, any tools or the tools of communication from that trip?
You know, that's a great question. I didn't. I don't know. I don't know what to do. You know, just...
Where will I go? What will I do?
I'm sorry. I'm despairing in front of
you. I thought you said you were hopeful, dude.
I do think that we just need to keep fighting the good fight and trying and really work with young people. There's, you know, people over 40 or 50, they got their minds made up. You know, they're never going to change their minds. So...
Yeah, it does seem to be demographically split that way. That's a fascinating fact. And yeah. So that therefore, the younger demographic, that they're tactically different if you're trying to get some of them off the fence versus, you're right, the old ossified
folks. To try and reach
folks.
Some of the young people. And we can make a difference. If we make extreme changes right now throughout the world, we can meet the goals of the Paris Agreement. It's going to be really, really hard, but we can do it, and we just have to keep believing. That's it. That's all I got.
Okay, well, that's helpful. And do you think, I'm just wondering if there should be tourist jaunts to Greenland so they can see. That might help. Because I always think, I think the flat earthers are a conspiracy just so that they're the first ones to go into space, because that's where we're going to want to send them, so they can see the round earth firsthand. So they get a free, just send them all, just do that now. And so it's,
you don't even need to go to space. You can just fly. You can fly to Europe, and you're up so high, like the sun's rising. You see the curve of the Earth. It's not.
So here's what you do: you set them up into space and say, "You have to confess Earth is round, otherwise we're not bringing you back."
Oh, there you go. Perfect. I would not suggest bringing people to Greenland, mostly because the carbon footprint is so big, and I talk about that in the series. But just flying to Greenland, it's so much gas and taxis and whatnot. I mean, the only way to do it is if you're gonna. Like, I'm going to plant a frickin' forest when I'm done flying to Greenland. But
just to make up for it. And Greta's quite the ambassador. Was she on the same trip with you, or did go in another time?
No, this guy who's on our board, Callum Greaves, works with her and her organization. So he was able to kind of patch her in, and we shot remotely with her. She didn't go on the trip, but she's a firebrand, man. It's remarkable what she's done.
Really good.
Yeah.
Doing that right. So now you have a show that just dropped like days ago from the moment of this recording, and I already know people who have binged the entire series, and I said, "Damn!" So I confess, I just read some of the reviews. I haven't seen any of them yet, but I just like the fact that you're a virologist. But it, in Utopia, it is curiously, weirdly synchronized,
yes.
Some overlap with our current pandemic. So what's up with that?
It's pretty crazy, man. I mean, this is based on a British show. Utopia was on the BBC a long time ago, like 10 years ago.
As was The Office.
Based on a British show. Yes, okay. And in fact, we're fighting that same battle. There are these hardcore fanboys of the British original series were like, the American series sucks. It's going to fail. It's terrible. And how did that work?
It always makes more money in America than in England.
But so, I don't get that argument, because no one's taking away that TV show. Like no one, when we made The American Office, we didn't take all copies of The British Office and like burn them. Like no one can watch them. Like you can watch them over and over and over again.
Plus, it's an American office show in an American office, right? It's not Americans in a British location, right?
So exactly. But Utopia is the same thing. So, and it's been being developed for years. Gillian Flynn was a showrunner and creator of our version. And it's all about conspiracy theories.
But the parallels are creepy. So give me a 3-sentence overview.
A group of comic book geeks discover a graphic novel that contains the keys to the destruction of humanity, which includes crazy viruses and a supervillain named Mr. Rabbit.
okay, that's how it begins.
How's that?
And then it takes off from there.
And then it's all downhill. Yeah, it's conspiracy theory thriller with some science fiction and drama and really dark sense of humor. I call it Stranger Things meets Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, so it's got some blood.
Yeah,
blood and
it
gore
has.
In it, too.
It has. Yeah, human heads being smashed.
Okay, so tell me about the virus. What's the virus up to in this story?
Yeah, so in this story, I play a virologist, Dr. Michael Stearns, who discovered a really obscure virus in the Andes Mountains in Peru that killed a couple hundred members of the Peruvian military. And so I studied it, and I created a super vaccine that not only inoculates it but cures the disease.
Now let me guess. You're a scientist, you call this to people's attention, and no one listens to you.
No one listens. No one cares.
I'm just spitballing there. Yep. Let me just...
Exactly. So all then right. I'm just relegated to kind of researching this virus in the basement of my college in Chicago. I'm a small potatoes guy. And then there happens to be this huge pandemic sweeping America. And the parallels between my virus and this one are very stunning. And so it does turn out that my virus is the virus that is killing hundreds or thousands in America. So all of a sudden I get thrust into the spotlight and I become this very, very unlikely hero.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's good to have a scientist as a hero, even if it's in a gory, weird storytelling.
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
Usually the scientist gets long forgotten after you pass them by in the beginning of a storytelling. So I'm happy to learn of this.
Yeah.
Does it also address social cultural things like fear of vaccines and this sort of
yes.
thing?
Yes, it does. And it was amazing. So we shot this thing. We finished this thing in September. The Wuhan virus started in December. The pandemic was in February or March, and we were texting each other like January, February, March, like, what is happening here? Is our show coming true? This is nuts. Because not only is it the virus, but there's a whole segment of the show that's about the vaccines, the production of vaccines, rushing the vaccine to market. How are we going to get this vaccine out? Who should
Wait,
take
Rain,
it?
Well, what it means is, you have a really effective PR firm.
Apparently, yeah. Like, I guess that's it. But
they started the Wuhan virus.
Yes, yes.
You're a PR firm.
I think I'm waiting for, because this is an Amazon show, I'm waiting for the conspiracy theory that Jeff Bezos started the virus in order to promote Utopia on Amazon Prime.
And with everyone, with the virus, no one is going out, so everyone needs their stuff shipped. So that's the Amazon.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's the only one. You know, he'll be a trillionaire by the time this is over.
He almost is.
So, Rain, we got to take a quick break. But when we come back, more with Rain Wilson, one of our patron geek saints out there.
Yes.
And we're going to take questions from our own fan base, specifically our Patreon patrons, when Star Talk returns.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
We're back, Star Talk, a Cosmic Crib edition, where I'm in conversation with Rainn Wilson, who's an actor and I just learned a climate activist.
Yeah.
And can I call you that, Rainn?
Sure.
A climate activist?
Why not? I'll take it.
You'll take it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so right now in this portion, we've solicited questions from our fan base. And we're going to lead off with Patreon members. These are the folks who actively support our podcast. So we got a question right here for you, Rainn. All right. So when reading and memorizing scripts for a science-heavy show like Utopia, how much of what you need and learn sticks with you and furthers your understanding of science in general? Also, just wondering, what was your favorite comic book character?
Ah, nice. Okay, good. Getting.
But you answer that first, because that's presumably a fast question. Favorite comic book character.
So here's the deal with me and comic books. So I was a huge comic book nerd as a child. And then around 11 or 12, I discovered these things, Neil, called books. They don't have pictures in them. There's no pictures. There's just stories. No, I'm giving him shit. I switched over to science fiction, but I have in the other room of our house, I have my 1970s and 1980s science fiction book collections, like 400 books that I read when I was a teenager.
Whoa.
So Dungeons and Dragons and science fiction books were how I lived my teenage years. Ultimately favorite comic book character, I loved Superman at first and then Green Lantern because I figured out that Green Lantern could kick Superman's butt by just making a kryptonite shell around him. But then I really loved Thor. I loved mythology and I loved the way that it blended kind of Norse myths and mythological characters with superheroes. So I was really big into Thor.
Excellent. So if you're first into Superman and later into Thor, those are the two authentic alien superheroes. They come from other planets.
That's true.
Just to put that in context, in
case
you never thought
about
that.
I hadn't really even thought about that. I guess because I've always felt like an alien myself, kind of in my own skin. So there you have it.
Okay, so now tell me, I actually claim cameo appearances in 5 feature-length films, but that doesn't make me an actor. And if I'm playing myself, I don't really have to prepare for it. So as an actor, what is the relationship between preparing for a role where that role has expertise and what might be real expertise that you'd glean along the way?
I mean, this
that's this question that was just asked.
Yeah, this is a great, it's a great question, and I get asked this one a lot. Fortunately, you know, I spent years playing a paper salesman, and I didn't have to do a whole lot of research about.
Did you train for that?
And a beet farmer. I didn't like research like beet growing, harvest yields, and irrigation techniques for the sugar beet.
But imagine how much better you would have been had you done.
I know. I'm kicking myself right now. But I'll be brutally honest. So I play a virologist, and I didn't do any research on what a virologist does or learns or anything like that. I'm sorry. I apologize, science nerds. Because in this case, and I would if it really was about the science, like if this was a show where I was in the lab a lot and doing work and talking about concepts of viruses and stuff, but I start in the lab and I'm immediately like episode two, just like launched out into the world, and I don't really deal with the science of it so much. So I knew it wouldn't really help my performance or my kind of authenticity to kind of dive into the research.
Is that because it's scripted in a way where you are more than just a scientist, you're a whole person who's interacting with a social ecology that's out there?
Yeah.
Because, for example, I forgot which show it was. It was one of these doctor shows, and there's Lawrence Fishburne as the medical examiner performing autopsies, right? Mm. So they don't put him out in the field too much. You know, when you go down into the bowels of where they store the bodies, he's there. And so his lines have to come out convincingly to what might be an audience who has fluency in the analysis of dead bodies. Mm. So presumably some of your lines have to be sort of medically authentic when you deliver them.
Well, in this case, there was really only a handful. Like I'm talking three or four lines over the entire series that needed to kind of sound medically and scientifically authentic. When you're doing a TV show and you're in the milieu and you're playing a doctor or a surgeon or a specialist or something like that, you're coming back time and time again, you know, like Dr. House or something like that. You really need to learn some more about medicine to be able to every single episode be diving into some kind of disease.
Right, and be authentically deliver the lines.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's got to at least sound convincing to some experts, and especially in the geekiverse, you'll be held to that.
That's true.
You know, we got people who are experts or no experts, and I'm a big, I'm known.
Yeah, you do this in the movies all the time. I remember I watched your live. I literally followed your live Twitter feed of was it Gravity? I think it was Gravity. Like everything that was right and most things that were wrong, but it was great.
Yeah,
it was really entertaining.
It was Mysteries of Gravity. That was the hashtag I created for it. But I try to give some latitude to the creative art. So people think I'm just a total, you know, nasty person to ever see a movie with, but I think I'm just misunderstood in my intent. Yeah, thank you.
You need a hug. If this weren't COVID, I would give you a hug.
I just need an air hug. We can give an air hug. Yeah. So let's get another question from one of our Patreon members. And sorry, I didn't give the name of that. That first person was Robert Stanley. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Robert.
So, and the next one is Chris Hampton. And these are clearly your fans. Hey, Rain.
That's where I have another house, Chris Hampton.
Chris Hampton. That's east of West Hampton, yes. Right? It's like, hey, Rain. So these are like total fan folks out there. Huge fan. Do you ever get into deep conversations about the universe with the other actors on set? If so, who have you had the best conversations with?
Oh, that's fantastic.
So let's broaden that to just your, you know, not only Utopia, but also The Office. How about that?
Yeah, that's great.
In downtime.
Sure we do. You know, there's a lot of downtime when you're on the set. So there's a lot of like really deep conversations. The one that just popped into my mind immediately was I did a long time ago now, it's about 15 years ago, I did a role in this action adventure comedy with Matthew McConaughey called Sahara. And
I missed that.
Yeah, it's a big, silly romp through Morocco and explosions and camels and hidden treasure and stuff like that.
Explosions and camels.
But that's...
That's the whole movie. Explosions, camels, hidden treasure.
There's a little bit more to it than that. And I played a science geeky nerd in that one. But I remember talking to Penelope Cruz, and I was just blown away by how smart she was and how... first of all, she's like the most beautiful woman on planet Earth. So it was a little bit, my jaw was kind of dropped. But she speaks five languages. She runs all these orphanages. She has got university degrees. She's very well read. She's had.
You can only know that in the downtime. Yeah. Now that I think about it,
exactly.
That's how you know that.
Yeah, just sipping on a coffee, eating on a sandwich. And we just had some, we didn't have a bunch, but I just remember this one conversation where we were talking about, you know, world peace and how to achieve it and working together and different cultures coming together and some big concepts. And I was just super impressed with her.
Yeah, I like that. So I did not know that about Penelope Cruz.
Yeah.
But very, very, very good
genius.
To hear.
Supermodel genius, basically.
I have a very opposite experience that I once had.
Okay.
I was filming, again, in a cameo role, mm-hmm. and we're between takes. So I'm sitting in my... You know, in the chair, you know, with the director's chair. But of course, I'm not the director. I'm just, but that's what they're called, the director's chair.
Sure.
And there's someone else. One of the other actors is there, and so there's some new photo from the Hubble telescope that had just arrived. Mm. And I'm excited. I'm an astrophysicist. I say, oh, have you seen this photo? There's stars being born in the middle of this gas. And she, oh, okay. And then went back to reading People magazine.
Oh, goodness.
And this is a person who was playing a medical doctor. And I was just so, you know, and again, I'm naive to assume that an actor is the thing that they're acting.
Right.
The fact that they're so good at what they're portraying, making me think that they know this stuff, that's why they're a good actor.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm so torn by this reality that an actor can be completely ignorant about everything in the world and all that matters is they deliver those lines. And so
at the end of the day, actors are idiots. So you said it. You said it best.
No.
Actors are idiots. Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Well, I'll say something else here. Okay. Just to dig myself out of the hole that
you I
just
dug
threw
for you.
Me in, yeah. Even though I dug the hole. Okay. So I remembered in a scene she was in where she delivered a line and the director said, no, you need the line to be, this is a person you remember from the past, and you had good memories then, but then you had later bad memories, so you have conflicted emotions. Go. And out came three lines from her. It was like, yes, it's all there.
Yeah.
In the body, in the eyes, in the gestures.
Yeah.
And I said, damn,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And so I asked her in the break, I said, well, so how long have you been acting? She said, well, yeah, it depends on when you want to start counting, but... since I was six, I was like,
wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you ask me, how long have you been thinking about the universe? It's like, since I was nine, right? Mm-hmm. I got that. I'm all in the universe.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, and she was all in with the acting.
No, I appreciate that. A great actor makes it look so easy and effortless. I always use Brad Pitt as the example. Like, it's just like, everyone watches a Brad Pitt performance, and you're like, I could do that. If I was that good looking, I could do that. I mean, he just is standing there the same time.
Oh, that's the only thing separating.
If I had won the genetic lottery like he had, I could do it. But Brad Pitt is a phenomenal actor. I mean, transformative, subtle, precise, emotional. Like, I'm astounded at the intelligence of his performances, all of them. So it's really complicated, and you spend your whole life making it look really easy. But it's
and
it's
you hope someone notices, and then you get the next gig.
Yeah.
Let's do one more question before we take the next break. So this is Violetta, a 12-year-old astro nerd in Birmingham, Alabama, and my mom Izzy is also a nerd. nerd soup here. Okay, we want to know, do you consider yourself a nerd? And if so, what level of nerd are you? And what's the nerdiest thing you've ever done? Thanks. Love you guys.
I love this
question.
Okay,
we only have a couple of minutes, so we need a fast answer here.
Okay.
But
I love this question. I have a chess clock over my right shoulder. That should prove it to you. I used to play competitive chess, and I was on the chess team, and we would drive around competing in chess. And once I went to a chess tournament, and I saw a guy who had mold growing in his ear. That's, I'm not exaggerating. That's how nerdy I am. Okay?
Okay, you didn't have the mold, but someone next to you did.
They did.
It means you're hanging out with that crowd.
I was hanging out with the crowd with a guy who had mold in his ear. That's how nerdy I am. Boom.
Okay.
There we go.
And I'm going to answer this too. So I'm a nerd from way back. I went to the Bronx High School of Science, but I was kind of a nerd jock. So, you know, the whole spectrum of tribalizing that goes on in high school. We have the jocks and the nerds. In the Bronx High School of Science, everybody's a nerd. So the nerd spectrum is shifted. The whole high school spectrum is shifted in the nerd direction. So everybody is a nerd. I was just a nerd jock. And then you had the nerds. Okay, they were like extra. So for me, what's the nerdiest thing I did? I once wrote down every single number that had any significance that I knew at that moment. So it was a whole sheet. So it was like all the digits of pi that I knew. I also happen to know the fifth root of 100 to 12 decimal places, but that's another story. Every phone number that I knew, including their area code. So these are 10-digit numbers. other numbers. And I just wrote that and I said, how many numbers could possibly be in my head that are just there for random access?
Yeah.
And I filled an entire sheet. And each number has had meaning in my life. And I thought that was kind of a geeky thing to do.
That takes the cake. That's remarkable.
I just thought maybe that was kind of geeky.
Although I do have notebooks filled with my... I wish I could just grab one right now. I've got notebooks filled with the drawings I did of my Dungeons & Dragons characters.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's good.
So
there you go. Okay, Izzy, Mom Izzy and Violetta, where we are on that scale. And just briefly, however nerdy you think you are, there are people who are way more nerdy than you are.
True.
And when I finally calculated the mass of Thor's hammer, someone corrected my calculation to say, the actual mass of Thor's hammer.
Oh, my God.
My calculation was as geeky a thing as I've ever done with a superhero universe, and that is the Marvel universe, of course. And then someone out-geeked me, who was a material science engineer who worked for the Navy, who had all kinds of superhero paraphernalia in his office, and he showed me the errors of my calculation.
Oh, man.
So,
and was he right?
Yeah, I had to concede.
Wow, good. Well, good for you that you had the humility to say, you know what? You got me.
Yeah, so it turns out I calculated that his hammer weighed the equivalent of a herd of 300 billion elephants. And I had authentic ways to calculate that. He said, no, it's actually made of a fictional substance called Ulu, and it weighs exactly 42.3 pounds. And my answer was so much better than that. but I had to concede. I conceded. One of my fans said, no, Neil, they didn't say on what planet it weighs 42.3 pounds. Because you weigh different amounts on different planets.
Sure.
But anyhow, we got to take a break. And when we come back, Rain, if you have questions for me, that'll be the chance to ask them.
Great.
When Star Talk returns.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And StarTalk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar carts, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Way Day starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your cart.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, it's time to give a Patreon shout out to the following Patreon patrons: Jennifer Sell Knapp and Chris Reynolds. Guys, thank you so much. Without you, we couldn't do this show. And for anyone else listening who would like their very own Patreon shout out, please go to patreon.com/StarTalkRadio and support us.
We're back, Star Talk, Cosmic Crib. Welcome to it. And in my cosmic crib, I got Rainn Wilson. Rainn, it's been a delight in conversation with you the first time we've met. And I'm also, I feel good that we've exposed your geek underbelly.
Yes.
It's actually not your underbelly. It's all around you.
It's my literal belly. Yes.
It's your literal belly, mm-hmm. not your underbelly. Mm-hmm. It's on top, all around you. And so in this third segment, I just want to probe, what are the depths of your cosmic curiosity? Because it's not every day someone hangs out with an astrophysicist, and I want people to fully exploit that occasion if they want to.
So listen, I hear a lot from people about this thing that Einstein referenced, spooky action at a distance. And then I know that this is kind of a controversial concept, and I just can't wrap my head around it. I'm really a science neophyte around this stuff. And I really have a hard time taking science and math into my brain. But, I know it has to do with theoretical physics and kind of some experiment or some happening in one place affecting something in some other place. And I'm just wondering what that means. I always hear that, and I just don't. I tried to watch a YouTube video on it. I couldn't wrap my head around it.
I love the way you said that. All right. It predates Einstein. Let's go back to Isaac Newton. So when Isaac Newton first wrote down his equations of gravity, and in these equations, there's a mass term of one object and a mass term of another. You multiply them together, and you divide by the distance between them squared. And when you do that, that's the force of gravity between these two objects. So these two objects, at a distance from each other, feel each other's presence. Hmm. But he knew there's nothing in space. There's no cable connecting them. There's no pulleys. Mm-hmm. It's empty. Mm-hmm. And this deeply disturbed Isaac Newton. Mm-hmm. It's like there's got to be some way that they're physically connecting to each other. Mm. But until we discover that way, I know my equations work. Mm-hmm. So I'm sticking with my equations. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the equations work. The orbit of the moon around the Earth, Earth around the sun, Jupiter's moons around Jupiter that you could see with a telescope. It was knocking him out of the park. But he was uncomfortable that you could have action at a distance. Mm. And thus became this quest for, is there something else going on in space that enables these two objects to know about each other? And then we've ended up exploring electromagnetism. There's another thing, action at a distance. Okay, there's a magnetic field. The concept of field had to be introduced, mm-hmm. right? And that was Faraday in the 19th century. Faraday introduced the concept as a magnetic field. And if we're going to talk about fields, we have a gravitational field, if you want to talk that way. And it's this zone out there where things can happen. But there's still the mystery of what's going on across, what is gapping that distance? Mm. And it took modern field theory to come to an understanding of it. So before I get to that, let's get the gravity solved. So Einstein figured out that gravity is not action at a distance. Gravity is a distortion of the fabric of space and time. And I, as a mass, am distorting space around me. And if you want to move in my space, you're going to follow that path. Mm. Mm-hmm. So Einstein is quoted as saying that mass tells space how to curve. Space tells matter how to move. Mm. So it kind of sidestepped the action at a distance question, because you're just sliding up and down like a skateboarder on a varied terrain, going up and down in the hole and out of the hole. That's what things are doing. When things are in orbit, they're just sort of falling on this curved fabric of space-time. Mm. So that kind of buys us some time on this, all right? Maybe that's all we have to do to think about gravity. Mm. With electromagnetism, we're not talking about spooky action at a distance. It's a photon is exchanged between two particles, and that creates the force. Mm. So photons carry the force of electricity and magnetism. That's modern field theory describing that. And so we're done there. So now, you folded that together with this other thing, which is, wait a minute, there's something way over here and something's happening and it's not gravity and it's not electromagnetism, there's something else. That, I think, was part of your question. Mm-hmm. So, but there's another sort of modern version of that that reveals itself in quantum physics. And it's called quantum entanglement. Mm-hmm. And so quantum entanglement is where you can have two particles. You know, you heard that particles can be wave, you know, matter can be wave and particles at the same time. You might have heard about that, the wave-particle duality. Well, okay, if you create a particle, you can create a pair of particles that are entangled with each other where they have complementary properties. Hmm. All right, now, separate the particles. You don't know what properties one of them has until you measure it. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. But the moment you measure it, you instantly know the properties of the other particle because they're complementary. Mm. Okay, what one is, the other is sort of the complementary variant on that. So if you separate these particles and don't measure them, just separate them, put them at great distance, then the instant you measure this particle, the other particle shows up with the complementary properties. Mm. And so the wave is occupying that entire space. And they instantly know about each other. That is the crowning achievement of action at a distance. Mm. In fact, this information communicates, this happens faster than the speed of light. It happens instantaneously. So sci-fi people are asking, can you make a warp drive that'll do this instantaneously and send something, information instantly? So there's a whole frontier of sci-fi people thinking about this phenomenon.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Nick. That's the first thing that popped into my head is like, wait, so these two, I don't want to say elements, but these two things.
Particles
that have been split apart can connect with each other, cannot communicate like language, but there's a tension between them. You know, is faster than light space travel a possibility?
You know, other than this quantum entanglement phenomenon, and there are a few other, there's quantum tunneling, which is also an instantaneous thing. But other than that, moving physical objects through space faster than the speed of light, there is no known exception to it and highly tested laws of physics that say it's impossible. Mm. So we're kind of stuck with that. What you need warp drives. You have to bend space, mm-hmm. and then you cheat by cutting across shortcuts through it or tunneling through wormholes. You can do it. You're not going to accomplish it by physically moving faster than light through space.
Got it.
So so there you have it.
That's good.
Now I'm thinking of you in Galaxy Quest. I can't keep that image of you.
That was my first role in a movie that was playing.
And you're supporting alien actor role.
Lonk the Thermion.
Thermion, yeah.
But another question I had for you is like, what was your most transcendent experience in astrophysics or astronomy that was filled with the most wonder? Like what discovery or galaxy or experiment did you kind of witness that kind of made you gasp and really stretched the limits of your wonder?
Yeah, I like that. And I think wonder is an undervalued feature of what it is to be a scientist or to be anyone on a frontier where you have one foot in what is known and the other foot in what is yet to be discovered. Mm. Many people fear that. They have to have an answer. They can't bask in the ignorance of the yet to be known. Mm. And that's unfortunate because the wonder is to gaze upon something and say, I have no idea what I'm looking at. And let me find out. Rather than, I have no idea what I'm looking at, I'm afraid, let me run back into the cave, right? Mm. These are two wholly different reactions. So for me, for parts of my PhD thesis, it involved obtaining data on mountaintops. And I went to mountaintops in the country of Chile, where those telescopes have access to the southern hemisphere skies, where the center of the galaxy passes overhead in the middle of their winter, which is the middle of our summer. Mm. So I would be there on the mountaintop. And this was a pilgrimage because I have to travel all these thousands of miles into the southern hemisphere. Mm. Then you have to flip your biorhythms to go nocturnal because your night becomes your day. Mm-hmm. All right. And so then there's this sort of physiological transformation. Then you have to regain your intellectual chops because you're about to get data that's going to plug into research that you already have in progress. Okay, so then the sun sets. There's a cloud layer that happens to roll in. Well, that cloud layer is below you because you're on a mountaintop.
Yeah.
Okay, so now the cloud layer completely surrounds you. Mm. And the moon is out just a little bit. So as it gets dark, there's still a little bit of light. I can see the tops of the clouds in moonlight. And I'm this island of rock with telescope domes that has ascended above this cloud layer. Mm. And there's nothing else in the world. Nothing in your sight line to the horizon, except you on this mountaintop above the clouds. So it's me on Earth, but really above Earth, looking out to the universe, ready to point my telescope to the center of the galaxy, waiting for photons that have been traveling for 30,000 years, emanating from the middle of the galaxy to land on my detector. And I'm there alone. This is a very solid, well, there's a technician in another room, but it is a moment when you are communing with the cosmos. And for me, that is the closest thing I've had to a religious spiritual moment. Mm. Not religious in the sense of, oh, there are gods up there. No, just a spiritual moment where I'm not, in this moment, I'm not thinking of the universe, I'm feeling it.
Mm. That's beautiful.
And that's happened to me many times on the mountaintop.
Mm. Wow, that's a great story. That's fantastic. Yeah, I feel like those moments of transcendence is what we're really going for, you know, as human beings on this planet. Like that's kind
and
of what makes
some people who've never had it might not know that that is something to go for.
Yeah,
so that's
true.
That's another
direction to head. But I've had that same experience at a Radiohead concert, you know.
Oh, okay. I did not expect that you to say that.
I've had that
okay,
same
that's
experience,
great.
You know, camping and being in the wilderness and seeing the stars. I've had that same experience, the birth of my son. But those moments.
Okay, wait, does your son know that You've analogized his birth to a Radiohead concert.
He would be thrilled.
Disclosed this.
He's a huge Radiohead fan. He's 16. Okay. He's already seen them in concert twice. He would be thrilled. Okay.
All right. Well, dude, I love that question, and thanks for empowering me to relive that moment, which was very special for me. Dude, we got to get you back on at another time. I don't think we plumbed all of the nerd space that we're capable of reaching.
Happy to come back anytime.
But Rainn Wilson, thank you for being on Star Talk.
Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, you're very welcome.
All right. This has been Star Talk. Let's call it the Rainn Wilson edition. I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, as always, bidding you to keep looking up.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.